Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm your host, Sean, making the money green, with my partner in picks, Ryan, Red Hot Kramer. What's happening, Ryan?
Yeah, everything's happening, Sean.
Everything is happening. The divisional round of the playoffs are upon us. Next week's the championship round. Getting a little emotional, man.
The divisional round.
Yeah. What did I say?
Championship.
No, I said next week's the championship.
Oh, I see.
It's coming around,
getting
man.
Ahead of yourself, Sean.
Yeah. Got a little emotional putting away, just putting away some of the cable boxes for the multi-TV setup. It's just one TV from here on out, man.
Yeah. It's such a bummer.
I know.
It's like 6 months of nothing. Well, baseball and basketball. Basketball playoffs are fun, I guess. And the March Madness is fun, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, NFL, the sweet thing about NFL is the multitude of bets. You know, you got so much action going on. I did pretty good in my picks this week as far as the team and the totals.
Did.
Yeah. I think I know I went 7-1, and I know the one that I got wrong, you had got right. And I think we agreed on a decent number of ones. So you were probably either 6-2 or 7-1 as well.
I believe I was 6-0 going into the Denver game.
Okay.
And
you had Pittsburgh. Right?
I went against. I told everyone they should take Denver, and I went against my own logic. Took Pittsburgh and the under.
Yeah. Well, see that happened to me. I went 7-1 on the podcast. And then you wake up and you're sitting there and you're looking at these halftime bets and different kind of prop bets. And I parlayed some that I shouldn't have. I mean, the one that I got wrong, I had in a parlay. So I didn't end up making a ton of cash, but I was up from the Virginia Tech bowl game earlier in the week. So it was all right.
Well, that's how you know it's a good week, when you screw up your plan and you still end up winning money.
Yeah, like I was and that Denver game, I like Denver +8. But instead of doing that, I just was like, well, Pittsburgh first half, they're going to get off to a good start. And then I that's how I saw the game going. But in fact, no, Denver started out hot. They were up 20-6 at halftime. It was -7 Pittsburgh for the second half, and I felt really strong about that. I was like, I gotta throw it on here.
It's weird. I feel like Dick LeBeau didn't get enough bad press about his coverage plans. I mean...
Well, it's weird because they basically said, all right, we're going to load up the box and we're going to totally stop Denver's running game and we're going to force Denver to throw it deep. But that's kind of Tebow's strength. Like, if you look at the balls he throws an accurate deep ball. What he struggles with is those, like, you know, those, like, 5-yard outs or 10-yard outs. The kind of, like, I don't know. He doesn't seem to have much touch when it comes to, like, shorter routes.
I saw some stat, his quarterback rating, like differential between passes 15 yards or further downfield and 15 yards and less is like 105 quarterback rating 100 downfield, and then it's like a 45 quarterback rating when on short passes.
Yeah, it's almost like they said, all right, we're going to force you to throw it deep to beat us, and that's how they won.
See, here's the thing. If you do that, you have to blitz on his right side or on his left side and force him right.
Yeah. No, I mean,
they didn't do that once.
That seems to be the way to beat the left-handed mobile quarterback. We see it with Michael Vick. It seems like it would potentially work with Tim Tebow, but I don't know. All right, let's take a look at the wild card action. All right, first up, the Cincinnati Bengals lost 31-10 against the Houston Texans in Houston. Houston covered the -4 spread and the over 38.5. I don't know, this game, it felt like it was, I mean, obviously the play that really changed the thing was the defensive interception return for a touchdown right before halftime.
Yeah, we both like Houston pretty much. I don't know, this one seemed too easy. This is one of those games where it seemed really easy and it actually worked out.
Yeah, no, it seemed pretty simple. You saw how this was going to go down. Andy Dalton wasn't going to have a great game. Houston was going to be able to run the ball, and that's just kind of how it went.
I mean, Houston's a legit team. They would be a Super Bowl contender if they had their starting quarterback, and they still have – I mean, they're still a really good team with their third-string quarterback. So,
yeah, I mean, we'll get to that in a little bit. But, yeah, I don't think Houston is going to get blown out. You know, that seems like, I guess, what people are feeling. Baltimore coming off a bye, Joe Flacco and that defense at home. But I think it's going to be a little closer than everyone thinks. You also had Houston first half in that game, right?
Oh, that was a nice little – I was pretty much counting that as a loss, and then boom.
Yeah, because it was 10-10, Cincinnati had the ball. It was what, Houston minus three for the first half?
Houston minus three, and Andy Dalton drops back, looks right, fires a pass. J.J. Watt somehow catches a bullet with, like, one hand.
He just put his hands up to try and knock the ball down. It just went into his
and
chest.
And took it to the house, and that really was the I would say that's that was the defining moment in that game. And then
yeah, no, I mean, you could. It felt like a close game before that. And then I think for this Bengals team, kind of young, obviously, in a couple key positions, having that huge momentum shift on the road right before halftime, they came out and they were pretty flat for the rest of the game.
Also, one thing to note, Andre Johnson looked pretty good in that game. I think he's going to be the key player coming up. So.
Yeah, I mean, if he can stay healthy, you never know with those hammies. It seems like you can tweak them at any point. And going into New England, the cold weather, that's...
Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. Denver's in New England. But yeah, Baltimore's going to be cold, too. I think, obviously, being in Houston at home, you can... yeah, it's weird, though. He had some drops, though, early on. But I think...
Working the rust off.
Yeah. Of course, Ryan is still thinking about his Houston Texans AFC to win the AFC. Now, how much did... Wait, what did you bet the Texans to win the AFC at originally?
So I... The game that Matt Schaub hurt himself. After the game, they said it wasn't a big deal. I was like, all right, I like this team. I like the way they're playing. No clear-cut favorite in the AFC. I'm going to grab them. I think... I want to say the bet's 10-1 or 12-1. Somewhere in that range. Really, really thought that was good value. No, 12 hours later, they report that Matt Schaub is being put on IR. But I got to say, I'm still not ready to tear up that ticket. I think they have a legitimate shot this weekend, and I just think that offense...
Well, here's the thing. If they can get past Baltimore, I think they match up kind of nicely against that Patriots team.
I think what gets lost in the shuffle is that they have a good defense. Their defense this year was equal to Baltimore's, and no one's really talking about that.
Yeah, you look at what Wade Phillips did to that defense. Now he's interviewing for head coaching jobs, which I don't understand. If you're Wade Phillips, why do you want to do that again? I get it. You've had your moments being a head coach, but now you're getting applauded for being a defensive coordinator. You're an older guy. You had some appendicitis. You've had some health issues. Why not just ride it out as a defensive coordinator, cash a nice check, get respected by the players, be on good teams?
You just answered your own question, Sean. Cash that bigger check.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, a defensive coordinator is making, what, mid six figures?
Right.
A coach is making $5 million.
Here's one thing I don't understand. Mike Mularkey got hired as the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. This is it's pretty funny that your playoff team that you're the offensive coordinator for gets shut out. And they have some offensive weapons, the Atlanta Falcons, gets shut out, and then you get a head coaching job like literally the next day.
And the other thing is everyone cited how he was how well he brought along Matt Ryan. And my argument would be Matt Ryan looked better his rookie year than he has since.
Matt Ryan peaked his rookie year.
He peaked like his eighth game in his rookie
yeah.
year.
He's looked kind of worse and worse. I still think he's better than Joe Flacco, but him and Joe Flacco, I think he peaked higher and he's not as low as Joe Flacco. But yeah, you're right. He was a much, much better quarterback before, and I don't know. If I'm a Jags fan, I'm not really that excited about it.
Right now, Matt Ryan is like the gatekeeper of serviceable quarterbacks, I think. Or you know, chance to make the playoffs quarterback. You have to be at least better than Matt Ryan.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. He's kind of like the watermark right there for...
But yeah, another point about Jacksonville, I just have a feeling... I really hope that the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars somehow gets into it with Jerry Jones.
Dude, he looks hilarious. What's his name? It's some crazy...
Something Khan.
Yes, he's a Middle Eastern fella.
He made his money in auto parts? Is that true? Something along those lines. They actually had Maurice Jones-Drew on Inside the NFL, and they talked about it. And I guess the owner basically said, whatever you guys need... I'm here for you, but you guys better win.
sounds like guys are going to get a lot of rims. He's got that crazy mustache that looks kind of like a super.
Looks like, is he going to be Mark Cuban or is he going to be I'm blanking, but the Redskins owners Daniel Snyder?
Yeah, I mean, spending money doesn't always translate into success, as Daniel Snyder can attest. Yeah, I don't know. And then he already kind of got into it with the media. I guess he said real Jack or. He just said basically the only real Jaguar fans are season ticket holders. So I think, he claims it was kind of a mistake in the way he was, it was taken out of context or something. But
he shouldn't apologize. They have trouble selling out.
Yeah, you got to call the fans out. And, oh, man, if you're the Jags, you just got to be kicking yourself for not drafting Tim Tebow.
So funny point about
that. For so many reasons.
Maurice Jones-Drew seemed visibly irritated with how much Tim Tebow is on TV in that part of Florida. He's like, God, we got to see this guy every day on TV. He looked like he seemed really angry about it.
Deadspin just posted a blog about it. I guess SportsCenter broke their own record. They referenced Tim Tebow 168 times in 1 hour of a show. It's like three references per minute, and they just clipped them all together. Too funny. Tebow mania is sweeping the nation. I'll play a little bit of the... I feel like a lot of people have already heard this song, but Ryan, you didn't hear it yet. This is the guy who wrote the St. Elmo's Fire theme song, Man in Motion. 1985, rewrote it for Mr. Tim Tebow. The YouTube videos we're checking out too, because they just have all these like dissolves between John Parr, the guy who wrote it, and Tim Tebow, and they're just like still shots. It's pretty good. Now right now it's just John Parr, the album cover, just him like looking serious.
I'm into this already.
Are kind of hard to make out. That's the actual thing. Gotta keep your eye on the ball. Solved to Tim Tebow looking really like, yeah, football. We can fly. Give it everything. Give your all. Shot at Tebow in the locker room addressing the media. But maybe sometime if you feel the pain, you'll find your own alone. Everything. You know you can't quit until it's won. Soldier on, all you can do, it must be done. Tim Tebow's fire.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so now Ryan.
Well, real quick. So remember when Joe Montana got really pissed off about Rudy?
Yes, that was hilarious.
How angry must Joe Montana be about Tim Tebow? It's like this no talent ass clown getting all this media.
Well, the Notre Dame, it was more a Notre Dame thing because he was actually the quarterback at Notre Dame.
Sure.
When Rudy happened, he was like, that was a movie.
But there's no way he could be happy about this.
You know, I would say probably not. I mean, he does get the media coverage of a guy who's won three or four Super Bowls. But it's, it's just fascinating because he's not good at throwing the football, and it's hard not to root for a guy like that. It's hilarious. All right. Well, we'll get to more Tebow when we wrap that game up. Let's move over to the Detroit Lions losing 28-45 to the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans covering the -10.5 and hitting the highest over-under in NFL wildcard history at 59.5. Ryan, you were on the Saints and the over. The Saints over 35 points. All look good. I was saying under. That was the one total I got wrong. And, yeah, it just seemed like anytime the public is so on a bet, it just seems like good logic to go against it. A lot of sharps were piling on the under once it was getting up that high. And even at halftime, 14-10, seemed like the under would be a decent bet. Still kind of worried just because of the way New Orleans moved the ball so easily, or both teams. I don't know, Ryan. What are your thoughts on the Saints team moving forward?
They just don't give a shit. The way they threw a 50-yard pass with, like, 5 minutes left in the game, up, 10 points to backdoor it? Yeah, I don't know. This Saints team is tough on the turf. I'm really, really excited to see how they play outside against San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, like I pointed out, there's the drop off the home and away was like 41-27, and
it's like a 2 touchdowns differential,
which is insane. I mean, the NFL to swing that much, obviously, you're going to lose something on the road. But yeah, this New Orleans Saints team, I don't know, man, could be kind of tough for them. I don't know, any other crazy bets hit here? It looked like Calvin Johnson hit the over on a lot of the props.
We kind of talked about it, but he hit every prop. I mean, he's an absolute animal. This team is going to be a tough. Here's
the thing. Detroit had a chance to win this game, and they dropped a few of those interceptions. And also that one fumble they recovered, they shouldn't have blown it dead. They should have been able to return that for a touchdown.
Yeah, Breeze looked really human at times, where you don't ever see Breeze throw a ball not near his receiver, and he made a couple bad throws.
Yeah, it's hard to say the guy had a bad game when they threw up 45 points, and he did make some nice throws, but there was a certain sense that, wow, the Detroit kind of multiple DBs got hit right in the hands. And I feel like, you know, a team like San Francisco maybe makes those plays.
Yeah, they definitely, I think their defense shows up a little bit more. Plus, it's not, not being inside on the turf really is a bigger detriment than people are giving it credit for.
All right, let's quickly wrap up these games and get over to the next round. Atlanta Falcons getting 3 points on the road against the New York Giants, getting shellacked 24-2. Their only points of the day were coming courtesy of Eli Manning and his intentional grounding in the end zone. Giants look pretty solid. I think a lot of it, though, also is just Atlanta not looking good. Atlanta just couldn't put anything together on offense. 2 fourth-and-ones where they went for it and just got stuffed. And then that third one, they didn't go for it and they punted. It seems like may as well, if you're going to roll the dice, just roll the dice consistently. Not great coaching. Matt Ryan didn't look great. They just seemed to – this one was another one that just – this is how people saw it coming.
Yeah, a lot of sharp money on the Falcons.
See, I didn't see that at all. I thought this was – in my mind, this was a pretty easy call. Giants at home, looking okay. Falcons, a dome team going on the road. I honestly thought Atlanta would put up more points. I bet the over on Atlanta points. I still like New York to cover. I thought it was going to be more like a 31-24, 28-24. Giants did hit the over. It went under 47.5. Which I also had, even though I just said I thought it would be 28-24. Yeah. This is another game where I bet the Falcons over points. Those team totals, you get sucked into those things. So I saw that wasn't going to hit at halftime, so I went big on the Giants second half.
I feel like the Giants defense did not get enough credit for playing really well in this game. Everyone's talking about how Smith made some bad decisions about going for it, but to stop a team twice on 4th-and-1, I don't care how bad you are executing a QB sneak, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan isn't a small guy. And even that, I thought that kind of play call they ran was kind of interesting, where they moved all those guys, motioned them around, they're just going to try and draw them off sides and then take the delay game and punt, and then he just did a quick snap and snuck it. I was taken back. I didn't think they were going to sneak it there. Yeah. But the Giants' D-line held up nicely, and their D-line's coming together at the right time.
As a Giants fan, this front seven is playing really well. It's playing well enough to mask the basically Aaron Ross.
Yeah, they're not – and that was another thing. I thought Matt Ryan would at least – it was just unclear. Like, he just couldn't
move the ball downfield. Well, they talked about – that was the story all week. The Falcons only gave up 6 sacks all year. They protected Matt Ryan, and he was getting hit every other pass attempt.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
I think he only got sacked once or twice.
Yeah, he didn't feel like there was a lot of sacks, but he just didn't look comfortable in the pocket. Okay, let's move over to the big game of the weekend, last game. I don't know. Can you call it an upset anymore? This Denver Broncos team getting +8 in Mile High seemed too high not to take it. And the over, 33.5. A lot of people like the under here. I thought the over was a decent play just because it was so low. So, Denver won 29-23, took them to overtime. They were up 20-6 at halftime, took them to overtime. Pittsburgh made a comeback. Like I said, I had Pittsburgh second half there. And, yeah, Tim Tebow, first play of overtime, 80-yard, you know, just hit the guy, what was it, maybe like a 10-yard pass and then just 70-yard run to touchdown.
Yeah, a little 10-yard slant, boom.
I mean, Tebow made a lot of plays. I mean, as much as you want to credit the Denver defense, and they deservedly so deserve, you know, they got some credit, you got to give it up. Tebow made a lot of plays, man, a lot of good balls downfield.
He threw for 316 yards, Sean. Tebow, 316.
Exactly.
31.6-yard average.
10 throws.
Yeah, I think the crazy thing was that if you didn't watch this game, you probably thought Tebow just got lucky again in the fourth quarter. They actually outplayed Pittsburgh. If anything, Pittsburgh got the lucky bounces. The fumble that bounced right up into Woodley's arms. The non-call on the backward pass.
Yeah, no, I mean, this really shouldn't have been as close as it was, because the touchdown that Pittsburgh ended up getting that kind of got them back into the game to make it 20-13 should have never happened. It was clearly a backwards pass, but they ruled it dead, and for some reason they couldn't challenge it. This is another rule where it's like, I feel like the NFL has gotten a lot of these things figured out, but I don't know, for some reason these backward passes.
We watch football every week, and I don't understand how you can't challenge that. But you can challenge if a guy, like, if he wasn't deck, because they're saying the whistleblower.
Here's the, I guess I heard this somewhere. I think Mike Pereira or someone explained it, that for some reason, when it's a fumble, when it's like a guy fumbling, or like, you know, he was tackled and the ball's coming out, and then whether or not they blow it dead, you can still challenge that if it shows clear possession. But in this case, when it's a throw and it's a backwards lateral situation, for some reason, they're worried about the play running late and having late hits, so they specifically made that one unchallengeable.
That's retarded.
Thinking that you should be able to see this one, it's obvious enough, and that if you let it run long, you're risking players' health. This one is one that's got to be fixed next year.
That wasn't even close, though. That was like, he threw it backwards a yard or two. It, really bad call.
Bad call. Pittsburgh just banged up. Pittsburgh's defense just did not make plays in that game. As much as you hear about that Pittsburgh defense, they just did not make plays. And you could kind of see, I mean, they struggled with Cleveland. They didn't look great, you know, kind of ending the season. Big Ben was banged up, especially in the first half. It seemingly he got some cortisone in the second half, looked a little more nimble, but not enough to win.
Yeah, looking ahead, can you remember a round in the playoffs with four better games than this? I feel like I haven't been this excited about a round of NFL playoff games in a while.
It is
because even the 14-point spread in New England,
so many storylines,
the game seems kind of exciting.
And Bill Simmons always talks about the Saturday night games. there just seems to be a little craziness attached to those. Okay, well, actually, real quick, I want to just. Well, yeah, we'll just real quick touch on the college football national championship.
Oh.
Ryan was texting me. He's like, can you believe it? We're really interested in this bet that we found of in the bigger games where we, gamble legally or whatever. They put up this prop bet of first score of a field goal versus first score field goal safety versus first score touchdown. And for some reason, I don't know, I mean, whatever, the way the juice works out, first score field goal is always a much better bet as far as how it pays. It's always like plus 130, plus 140.
Yeah, typically, it's first score field goal will be between plus 130 and plus 150, and first score touchdown will be between like minus 150 and minus 170.
Now, see, what I don't understand is, now is this... Is there actually math to back this up? Is that more traditionally what happens, or do people just want to bet on a touchdown more than the field goal? Because in my mind, it feels like a 50-50 proposition.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe the math's not
there.
In
a normal... I can't imagine the math favors touchdown, period.
But it feels like it's a little... There's some disparity there.
Yeah, sure, but in this game, I mean, the last time they played nothing but field goals...
LSU, Alabama, 6-3 in the regular
season. Two really good defenses... So, yeah, I texted Sean. I'm like, I think we just have to take this for both teams. You can actually bet for the whole game, for the game, or individually for Alabama. So, we took plus 145 Alabama first score a field goal, first score LSU a field goal. Now, obviously, one of them cashed, one of them was a push, but it just...
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. I didn't realize, because I assumed since it was the first score or whatever, that I thought if no one scored, you just lost. I thought it was one of those things. But I just logged on and saw, like, oh, man, that was a push. Sweet.
What really killed me was the other prop I was going to take in the game was no touchdown for Alabama, 10-1, no touchdown for LSU, 10-1.
Oh, wow.
But our good friend Steve, the stat nerd McFadden, talked me out of it and then proceeded to gloat when Alabama scored that garbage touchdown to tell me, see, it wouldn't have hit. But, man.
But you would have had the 10-1 LSU.
I would have had the LSU.
Well, and see, that's why I bet this, because you have two plus 145 bets. So even if you seemingly just go 1-1, you're still
win.
Up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a really crappy game, but at least a little bit interesting
here's
from a better perspective.
Me. These people that are these SEC enthusiasts that sit here and tell me that, oh, just because the public didn't like the game because there wasn't lots of flashy offense, it's just great defense. That's bullshit. This is what happened. Les Miles, typically, he recruits really well. He comes out, and he got fucking – he didn't coach. They didn't change their game plan. They got destroyed.
Yeah, how did they not throw in Jarrett Lee at some point just to try
it? Here's what killed me. This was – Alabama's defense was awesome. They deserve to win the national championship, but Alabama's defense. Alabama's offense was incredibly average, or LSU's offense was awful, and LSU's defense was just all right. It was not an impressive game. If I'm Stanford or Oklahoma State, I'm feeling pretty – like Oklahoma State, I feel like, could have beat that same LSU team.
Stanford one loss or two?
Two after the bowl game, but Stanford one loss could have beaten that same LSU game. I think
– Okay, so yeah, you have Oklahoma State – you have three one-loss teams, and it seems insane.
Well, now
that
you have four because LSU is a one-loss team. My one beef with the system is that Alabama didn't have to play a conference championship,
right?
And they still got to go on in the bowl game.
And in Alabama's defense, they already beat LSU. Why should they have to play LSU again?
No, LSU beat Alabama.
Oh yeah, sorry.
But so I'm reading.
Yeah, so
reports
LSU's
that,
like, I already beat Alabama. Why would I have to beat them again? It makes the whole system is insane.
Anyway, reports out of the BCS meetings are that they are talking about a plus one system, having a four team playoff.
Oh, okay, four teams.
Well, that's
I think
the
that's
plus
good.
One. Okay. You have an extra game.
Okay.
One plays four, two plays three, and the winners play.
See, I'm fine with that, and I think that'll work nicely.
And then it will eventually get to an eight team.
Well, what'll happen, I think, in my mind, this would seemingly work out nice, is that you have four super conferences, you'll have a conference game to decide who moves on from those four conferences, well, and then you have that final four.
It's getting pretty – they're actually talking about – each conference, once they get to 16, having a two-round championship playoff, and then that would feed into a...
So that would be like a Sweet 16
a two-
situation.
Or three-round national championship. I mean, at the end of the day, I think they're starting to realize they can make lots of money with the playoff system, which...
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten into it before. I really think it's because these bowls are run as nonprofits, and they're worried about, being exposed financially. Obviously, I think it was the Fiesta Bowl. They went, they kind of got exposed. I think a lot of these bowls are kind of running under that same pretense. All right, let's move on to the divisional action, Ryan. Saturday morning, 1:30 Pacific time. The New Orleans Saints head into sunny San Francisco, 57 degrees, clear, where they're -3.5, and the over-under to 47.
So, yeah, this game actually opened at 3, which is... got pounded. People just crushed New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's gone all the way up to 4 in some places. And this is the interesting. The over-under opened at 47.5 and has actually moved down to 47. So I'm not quite sure about that one. It seems like it would be hard to bet the under in this game.
Really? Because I'm... right now, looking at 47, I'm kind of feeling that 47. Well, here's the thing. I think it depends who do you like in the game.
I like San Francisco.
Okay. Now, give me your reason
and
why.
I think the logic is that San Francisco – so I like San Francisco for a couple of reasons. We talked about it. New Orleans only averaging 27 points on the road this year. Now, none of those road games were against the top 10 defense, or top 5 at least. This is clearly the best defense that New Orleans is going to be playing all year. It's also the best offense that San Francisco is going to be playing all year. I think the combination of the grass and the dominating front seven for San Francisco They limit the run game. I think they get after Breeze a little bit. And we talked about this when the line came out. 3.5 just seems too juicy not to take. Yeah. It seems like it's going to be a close game. If New Orleans wins, I could see them winning by a field goal for sure.
This feels like a field goal game to me. Maybe 4 points, but it feels like a field goal game to me. And New Orleans or San Francisco has a history of these close games. They kick a lot of field goals. It's kind of bizarre scores. Like they'll win weird numbers or.
Well, anytime you get 4 field goals in the game, you're going to make the score weird.
Yeah.
I just think.
So that's the thing. I think if you're betting San Francisco +3.5 or San Francisco money line, I say you kind of go with the under. Because I think if they win this game, I mean, perhaps they could cover and it'll hit over. But I think the way San Francisco wins this game is like a 16-13, 17-13, something like that. I think it stays under.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a good feeling either way.
But if you like New Orleans, I don't see how you like New Orleans and you like the under, especially if you like New Orleans to cover at 3.5.
I think you talked me into the under. I really think San Francisco's defense is going to make a statement.
Well, here's the matchup I want to see. Patrick Willis versus Darren Sproles. I think if they can kind of contain Darren Sproles, and I think the conditions and just San Francisco's defense in general will slow down their passing offense, I think if you can...
Yeah, I think it's going to be a combination of Willis and Bowman, I think is his name, D'ing up on Graham and Sproles. And I think those are the guys, if you take them away, that offense won't be as prolific.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think the receivers, they catch a lot of big deep passes and they get a lot of, press or whatever, as they should. But I think the really key to their offense is Jimmy Graham. And
those damn screen passes.
And Sproles. He's just, you run him out of the backfield. He's good, man. But like you said, I think he really had a great season, especially being on turf.
So here's a prop that I noticed that seemed a little off to me. Darren Sproles' total yardage, return, receiving, and rushing, over under 170.5.
Wow, that feels a little high to me.
Now,
especially...
Well, here was the thing.
See, what does he return kicks or
he
just
returns
punts?
Punts and kicks?
No.
And Andy Lee has a huge leg, so I guess he could outkick.
Wait,
the
he's
coverage.
The kickoff.
He's the punter.
He's the punter. Okay.
Akers seems to get a bunch of touchbacks. It just seemed like a really big number, especially San Francisco hasn't given up a bunch of rush yards. I just think seems like something maybe you take the under on.
No, I mean, yeah, I think that. And the over-under depends on how you kind of see this game going. Well, let's play devil's advocate, Ryan. How does New Orleans Saints cover this 3.5? Well, how do you see the game going?
They do what they did in the preseason game and blitz the shit out of Alex Smith and get to him. I mean, so in a couple games, Alex Smith has gotten really, really beaten up. The Baltimore game comes to mind. It's just if they can confuse that offensive line and blitz, they can get to him. The thing is that I think San Francisco is just going to run it down their throat. New Orleans doesn't have a great defense. They rely on the blitz way too heavily. And I saw some stat. Alex Smith actually has 8 touchdowns versus only 1 pick against a blitz of 6 men or more.
And you like, from a coaching perspective, you like Jim Harbaugh having that extra week, explaining to Alex Smith, compressing the playbook. I don't think he's going to ask too much of him, kind of doing what he's done the entire season. I think if San Francisco doesn't turn the ball over more than 2 times, 1 or 2 times, I think I like them to win. And especially if you're looking at this money line right now, San Francisco +170. I mean, you just kind of look at that historically. The number 2 team +170 at home.
At the same time, this does feel like of all the teams, the home teams, I guess I could make an argument for Baltimore, but San Francisco definitely could be the team coming off the bye that kind of lays an egg. But I think Harbaugh seems to have that team dialed in.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't like some of the other teams coming off a bye because of the way they run their team. I guess maybe Baltimore's a little different, but I think what's hurt teams in the past is the quarterback getting rusty. They rely on a lot of passing, a lot of stuff like that. San Francisco, that's kind of not their style. They're slower, compress the field, that kind of thing. So I think I think having the week off kind of helps a smash mouth defensive team versus like a team like the Saints, I think, would have been hurt almost more by the bye than other teams. Any other interesting prop bets you got going, Ryan? Or?
Well, this is one I might actually take. Drew Brees, over-under, 335.5 yards.
335?
Seems way too high to me. It seems like people are reacting to his dome performances. Not the same guy on grass. I just don't think he's going to have as many possessions. I think San Francisco is going to have nice, long, 6-7 minute drives.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That Detroit team tried to go shot for shot with him, and they just couldn't.
They tried to,
They tried to outshoot him, and you can't beat him that way. And maybe they didn't have they probably didn't have the players really to kind of do what San Francisco can do. So I think it's the matching of contrasting styles. I'll go with the historical play here and take the San Francisco 49ers, getting 3.5 points.
Yeah, I'm taking San Francisco, and I'll also take that under.
Yeah,
for picking
and,
everything.
Yeah, and if you're looking at money lines this week, plus 170, not bad.
Honestly, I don't like the money line here as much. I'd rather just take the points.
Yeah, you know,
I think that half point is so much value.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, just stick with the 3.5 and the under. All right, let's move on to the Tim Tebow game, as they're calling it.
Oh.
The Denver Broncos at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Broncos are getting 13.5. The over-under is at 50. Now, here's the thing, Ryan. I like the Broncos here because that number is a little too high for me. And I say if you can buy a half point or a point, if you can get that up to 14.5 minus 130, 125, that feels really good to me.
Well,
three scores in a playoff game?
If you bet it when it came, it opened at 14. I grabbed it immediately. So I got it at 14. I feel comfortable about it. I know it's a push versus a win, but I feel like 14 is good. So that last game, I believe Denver lost by 18, and that was with a lot of bad breaks. A weird fumble, kind of some weird lucky bounces for the Patriots. I think, to me, this is a no-brainer. You take kind of the same logic as taking the points last week. It's a playoff game. 14 points is a lot in an NFL game. I don't really see how they can win this game, but I also don't see how they can't.
That's what they say in the playoffs, don't bet on an underdog if you don't see they can win, Ryan.
I can't remember the last time we had a 14-point underdog in the playoffs, so I'm going to take Denver here. I really like it. I think the key is that New England just can't stop anyone. And I think if Denver gets up early, I guess they could. This has the feeling of a game where Denver gets up early, is up 24-21, and Tom Brady leads them down the field for a game winning. Or maybe they're down 24-20 or something.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Denver, I almost wish I could bet Denver starts this game off 14-0. And then Belichick unleashes the hounds, and then it could get out of hand, though.
They don't have the hounds. That's the thing, is they don't have any pass rushers anymore. I mean, Carter got hurt. They're just not a good team. I think if they...
Yeah, that's the thing. I think Tebow can move the ball downfield on him. He's got some confidence.
Yeah, you know, the more I think about this, I really like Denver, and I like the over. The reason I like the over is just because I don't think Denver can... Or New England can hold Denver to under 24 points.
Yeah, how much did... what was the final in that Denver-New England game the first time? They won by 18, but...
41-23.
Yeah, so that's 64 in my
mind. And that was... Denver probably should have had at least 7 more points. They got really unlucky. So, I mean, I don't know what the weather's like. I think the weather's supposed to be nice. I think I looked at the weather for all the games, and it's supposed to be relatively nice. So I think...
Here's what it's going to come down to. In the same way that Detroit had chances to make interceptions and didn't, I feel like this Broncos team might have a couple chances to pick off Tom Brady. It's going to be up to Champ Bailey and those guys to actually make those interceptions. And the same thing, and this, you know, the traditional way you beat the Patriots, or seemingly the formula you got to do it now, is to, get on Gronkowski and those tight ends. My thing would be to slow down Gronkowski and just force Aaron Hernandez and Wes Welker to beat you, which they can beat you. So
that was kind of what they did last game, and Aaron Hernandez had a huge game.
You got to pick your poison. I say get Gronkowski out.
So the only prop bet to me that looked interesting, one prop that if you don't like the Tebows, his pass his over-under for pass yards is at 190, which is considerably inflated from the last game.
Yeah.
But the one that really popped out to me was, will Josh McDaniels and Tim Tebow hug at the end of the game?
What was that at?
Yes was even money, no was minus 130.
Wow.
I feel like I need some inside knowledge. Will Josh McDaniels be on the sideline? Because I feel like if he is, they're hugging.
Yeah, I mean, he seemingly had a good relationship with McDaniels, right?
Yeah, he
McDaniels
thanked him for drafting him, and yeah.
Yeah, I don't see why.
Someone must know that he's not going to be on the sideline or something.
Yeah, that's a hilarious prop. Will they hug?
When does this prop end? Like, what if they hug in the like after the locker room? Does that count?
Yeah, what if they hug 7 days later?
It doesn't say on the field at the end of the game.
That's an interesting prop. I would parlay Denver plus 14 and the McDaniels hug. Although if Denver wins, I don't think he could hug.
He could get the Belichick treatment.
Oh yeah, dude, Belichick is going to be so pissed. That's another thing. Didn't McDaniels kind of show up Belichick in that Denver game? I guess he got humbled and Belichick brought him back in. Plus he's probably got the inside Iggy on Tim Tebow. Do you think is that partly why he got hired?
Not so much Tim Tebow, but I think he just having some knowledge about all the personnel over there.
Yeah, it's like when the receiver gets cut and then the division.
I'm pretty sure John Fox cleared that roster. Like, there's not a ton of guys left for McDaniels, even though it's only been a year.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tebow and Denarius Thomas, I know those are a couple.
Eddie Royal was there. Some of the defenders, Champ Bailey, obviously, Doomerville. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go Denver here. I'm all over it.
And you like the over, too?
Yeah, I don't feel strongly about that, but I'm going to take the over. I just, New England's defense can't stop anyone.
Yeah, I'll take the over at 50. I don't know. I don't got a strong feeling on that one. I say just Denver 14 here. That's what I'm feeling. And a money line if you're a believer in the man upstairs. Okay, moving on to the Sunday games, the early one, 10 a.m. West Coast kickoff. Houston Texans heading into Baltimore getting 7.5 points. Ryan, I'm on the Houston Texans train, which is worrisome, but give me Houston plus 7.5.
This is ridiculous. So, again, when this line came up, we kind of talked about it. We thought it would be right at 6.5 or 7.
Yeah.
But to be 7.5 seems a little too strong for Baltimore. We talked about like what team will come out flat, and we mentioned San Francisco, but you talked about how their power running game. Joe Flacco is now the worst quarterback in the playoffs, in my opinion. I would rank Yates ahead of him. I'd rank Yates 7 and Flacco 8. I don't trust Flacco at all.
Tebow 6?
Definitely. No, I'm going Yates 6, Tebow 7.
Okay.
But I don't trust Flacco. I don't.
Eli 5?
Eli 2.
Whoa. Wait, hold on a second. Stop the tape. Okay, Eli Manning. Now, who is he beating?
Who's more dialed in right now than
Drew
Eli?
Drew Brees?
Yeah, he's one. Drew Brees is one. Eli's two.
Wow.
Aaron Rodgers, then Brady.
All right.
Anyway, enough.
Woo! Getting dizzy over here.
So, I just think the story in this game is that Houston's defense is relatively equal to Baltimore. And then it comes to the offensive side. I like the Houston offensive line better. I like the running game better, and I like what Yates can do. Once he gets settled down, if they need to start him off with some nice, easy throws, get him settled down. And, I mean, you can throw against this team. Andre Johnson's going to be tough to cover down the field. I really think Houston can win this game. I think this spread's crazy. I think you're crazy to take Baltimore laying 7.5. And the number is dropped. He opened at 38. It's down to 36. That seems awfully low.
Yeah, I like the over here.
Just
because it's too low. I think this is going to be like a 2017 game, 24-17. This game feels close to me. I don't know.
But again, don't feel great about the total. Feel really good about Houston. This might be my favorite pick of the weekend. Give me Houston 7.5. And I would throw a couple bucks on the money line. You can get it for 280 right now. I just don't see the argument for Baltimore here. I haven't heard anyone make a compelling argument about why Baltimore is going to dominate this game. Because really, for a 7.5 point spread to hit, you're dominating the game.
Yeah, I think Houston can slow down Ray Rice, or at least I think they can put him in a position where, as long as they don't get dominated by Ray Rice and force Flacco to make some throws. Now, he is at home, and that defense is much better at home. This game feels close to me. It feels like a 3, a 4, or a 6-point game. It doesn't feel like a 2-score game to me. I guess I could see the Ravens winning by 10. I don't see them winning by 13 or 14 points.
Yeah, it feels like a 20-17 type game, which the fact that 20-17 gets you over makes me really like the over. Because
yeah, 20-17 gets you over, and you're covering that 7.5 without sweating.
And I don't know. I really like this. This might be my lock.
Wow.
We'll see.
We'll see. All right, Ryan.
Oh, well, real quick before
sure.
we move
Oh, yeah,
on.
You got some props in there?
I got a couple. First one is Andre Johnson. I'm okay. a big Andre Johnson fan. But the over-under is only 70.5 yards.
On now, Andre Johnson?
I think he knocks that out in 2 catches. I think he has – I think that one of their patented rollout, I think they go deep to Andre Johnson. I think he, at some point in this game, catches like a 50-yard pass, maybe for a touchdown. I like the over. I think that's probably something I'll wager a couple dollars on. And the other one, this was kind of interesting to me. So the prop is, what will T.J. Yates have more of? Touchdowns, plus 200. Interceptions, plus 200. Tie, plus 135. I love touchdown here. I think they're not going to make him – they're not going to give him difficult passes.
Yeah.
I can definitely see this game ending with him having 1 touchdown pass, no interceptions. Baltimore hasn't been a team to – they're not getting a ton of interceptions. Maybe he'll fumble. I think it's more likely that Suggs gets him from the blind side than him throwing an interception. I don't believe in the secondary for Baltimore.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, we're kind of agreeing on this stuff. It's always a little bit worrisome. Okay, Ryan, any other prop bets going on?
Those are the only ones that stuck out to me.
Okay, now, last game of the weekend, Ryan. The New York Giants heading into the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, where the New York Giants getting only 7.5 points. The line is down from the opening line of 9 points. The over-under is at 52.5 points. Well, Ryan, I think it's a foregone conclusion that you're going to take the New York Giants here. Explain why.
Another line I grabbed on it Sunday. Opened up at +9. Can't really I understand it. So they were – Packers were 7-point favorites in New York. So by the gambling logic, it should be a 13-point spread. Clearly, they're giving the Giants a little more respect. One, because they played them to a 38-35 game that they probably should have won had Eli not thrown that ridiculous pick six. They spotted
also in the Meadowlands.
Spotted 7 points. Well, that's what I'm saying. The Giants don't have a great home field advantage. I'm not sure if this game being on the road really helps Green Bay more than it hurt or hurts the Giants more than helps Green Bay. But this is another one. I think I understand having to favor Green Bay by a touchdown, but and obviously it corrected down to 7.5. But I just don't see it. This Giants defense is playing better than when they last played. Their offense is playing better when they last played. And, you know, maybe Rodgers comes out and looks great, but he hasn't played in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, actually.
Yeah.
And quarterbacks get rusty. I mean, it happened to Brady. It happened to Manning, like Peyton Manning. It happens to good quarterbacks, especially when you rely on a lot of timing, back shoulder throws. And the big thing is it's going to be cold. It looks like it's going to be around 15 degrees at kickoff with a slight wind. Obviously, that's not going to affect the passing game too much, but Green Bay can't really run the ball. That might come into play. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm a Giants fan. I like the Giants with the spread. I like the money line. The over-under feels, I guess, if you're taking it.
I said my instinct here is under.
Yeah, I was going to say it seems a little high because the first game they played was a bit of a shootout. I think the Giants' defense, much better since the – and the Giants' running game, much better since the last time they played.
Yeah, I'll take the Giants in 7.5 here just because my logic going into this weekend is just take all the dogs. It seems to be way too many points that they're getting. And just in general, I feel like if you bet on all the underdogs here, you probably go at least 3-1, maybe 2-2. I'd be surprised if you go 1-3 here. Giants, I kind of feel at least confident about. I mean, I understand why everyone's making comparisons to the 07 team. And I feel like just everything I'm hearing, no one is kind of giving this Packers team enough respect. I mean, looking at a Packers team that almost went 16-0. So they're a very good team, and they are at home. You know, I agree with the points you made. And, yeah, it just seems like one of those things where it's like, it's almost too many people are kind of going on this thing of like, well, the Giants, they're going to give them a close game. And, oh, this kind of reminds you of that 07 team. And I don't know. That's kind of my reason against it. But I say 7.5 is still a little too high.
Phil Simms made a good point on Inside the NFL where basically all things considered, if Aaron Rodgers comes out and is dialed in, the Giants can't beat them. They're not going to be able to beat them. But a couple interesting props in this game. I thought a number of times Aaron Rodgers will be sacked. Over under 2.5.
What is the juice? What's the
minus 130 for the over. Under even money. Seems like he was getting hit a lot more down the stretch. The Chiefs, which they don't even have a great pass rush, hit him a bunch.
Yeah, but that Chiefs game, that felt like...
All right, well...
I'm giving them a pass on that. They felt like they kind of just got complacent.
All right, well, this one's going to blow your mind. Who will record more rushing yards in the game? The line is Giants minus 5.5.
Wow. That seems like a lock out of
the logic here, I guess, is that Green Bay being ahead by a lot, running the ball. I just don't see it. The Green Bay can't run the ball. Period.
No, they're the same way like the Saints. Even when the Saints were up, they were still chucking the ball, and they'll check it down, but they'll just be running. You know, they'll be throwing out of the backfield.
Yeah, this seems like a bet that if you can find this at your local bookmaker,
that seems like the best bet of the weekend.
And the Giants' running game is coming on strong against.
And Tom Coughlin's so stubborn, and Gilbride. Even if the running game sucks, they're just going to keep hammering it away. They run when they're down. They run when they're up. They're stubborn about running.
And Jacobs is angry.
I mean, you're going to get probably an extra 10 carries.
At least.
Yeah. So even if those 10 extra carries only average you like 0.6 yards, that's going to be a six yards or ahead to maybe cover.
Yeah.
That one seems way too small.
It seems easy, but, you know, it's never easy.
And I say under here. What's
did,
my gut
did we agree on everything, Sean?
Yeah, I don't know,
that's
man.
That's horrible.
It's not a good sign.
That's horrible.
So just maybe do the reverse parlay here. All right, Ryan, let's...
Well, real quick, before we go to locks, a couple other prop-type deals. This one I thought was interesting. Will any game go to overtime this weekend? No, minus 400.
Oh, that's no fun.
Don't ever promote betting, but it just seems like usually this should be minus 1,200. Like, why is this only minus 400? Just because it seems like... normally this bet is like, yes is like plus 500 and no is minus 1,000. So... getting a lot of value. I think people are remembering what happened last week. Another one. Who will record the most passing yards this week? Breeze, obviously, 2-1. Brady, 9-4. Rodgers, 5-2. My pick, Eli Manning. 4.5-1 against that not a great defense. It seems like, you know...
yeah, you could get a lot of
value
there.
Right there.
And I could see it going either way, whereas if... they're down a lot to Green Bay. They're going to be throwing a lot.
Either way, I think they're going to have
getting
to
getting off the, yeah.
Another one, who will record the most receiving yards? Welker, Colston, Nixon, Gronkowski, and Cruz, all at the top. But where it gets interesting for me, Andre Johnson, 10-1. Another one. That seems
yeah,
like,
I mean, you're basically betting that he comes back and he's not rusty. And
here's the thing, though. Welker, Colston, Nix, Cruz, Gronkowski, they all have to share.
Yeah.
Andre Johnson's kind of the main guy over there. So if he catches
T.J. Yates is not afraid to chuck it up to him either.
Just thought those two were interesting. And then, you know, we have the Super Bowl odds. I did see a prop. Green Bay will not win the Super Bowl. You can get it for plus... 250, I think.
Wow, that's fun.
Feels like a good one. But odds to win the AFC: New England favorite at 2-3, Baltimore 2-1, Houston 9-1, and Denver 16-1. Not much value there, unless you think Houston can win this game.
All right, you know, so let's do the math here. Houston,
so they're
3-1.
They're 3-1, and they would probably be what, same similar next round. So maybe not a ton of value in taking them.
Yeah, you're basically 2-3-1 underdog.
So the NFC, you have Green Bay's -110. You have New Orleans 9-4. San Francisco 13-2.
Yeah, that seems
like
a
6.5-1, and Giants 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Super Bowl odds here, and maybe they're a little different from where you're getting, but Denver 40-1.
Yeah, I got 35-1.
Houston 28-1. I mean, Houston 28-1. I feel like there's a lot of value there. And San Francisco 14-1. Obviously, you'll have a chance to hedge yourself pretty strong there.
So the thing about San Francisco is I don't think it's terribly far-fetched. I mean, the Giants obviously have a shot against the Packers, but that means San Francisco could be hosting the conference championship game if they win. So that they're definitely. I mean, now you're talking about betting a team 13-1 to win the Super Bowl, where they would be 3-point dogs this week and possibly favored next week.
Yeah, and Houston, I like the Texans matching up against the Patriots.
Yeah, that's
call me crazy. I mean, yes, obviously it's a long shot. There's a reason it's 28-1, but I think if you're kind of looking for a fun,
but at this point in the season, I feel like that's a fair long shot. I mean, the big thing is that the AFC will be probably underdogs to the NFC. That's why the AFC long shots are such longer shots. But yeah. It does seem like you get there and then you can hedge and you can guarantee yourself some money. But
yeah, and even Denver 40-1.
All right, Sean.
No, here's the thing. If they win this game, you're going to be able to hedge a lot. Right, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
you have a lot of hedging position there. Okay, give me a lock of the week, Ryan.
All right, I'm going to try to stay clear of this Giants game. But my lock's definitely, it's 100% Houston. Houston plus 7.5. That's... I spoke about it. I like all the dogs, but Houston is clearly my favorite.
All right.
How about you, Sean?
Yeah, well, I was trying not to take Houston as well.
Take it. If you feel if that's
yeah,
the one.
I got to lock it up at Houston 7.5, too. That one seems to me, Green Bay I can see winning by 7.5. Baltimore I can see winning by 7. Or no, I mean not Baltimore. New England I can see covering. Saints I can see covering. I don't see Baltimore covering that 7.5. I don't see it. Even maybe, yeah. I like Houston plus 7.5 as my lock, Ryan. Sorry. I have to do it. All right, Ryan, give me an upset special.
God.
All right, so you got the Giants winning out, right?
I grabbed it. So, in full disclosure, I immediately bet both Giants plus 9 and Giants plus 310 is what it was at the time.
Wow.
In terms of that, I mean, you could argue the same value on Houston. I think they're both relatively good value for a playoff game, getting close to 3-1.
Yeah, I like Houston better if you're talking about money line and the points, just more so because I don't think Baltimore is nearly as good as Green Bay.
Yeah, I like that. I think Eli gives them a chance to win at the end of the game. I think, you know, if it's a 4-point game and Yates is driving, a little bit less confident than I am with Eli with the ball.
All right. Actually, no, I'm going to switch my lock. Well, I still feel really good about Houston 7.5, but I feel like I like that over in the Houston bet almost as much as Houston. I like that over 36. That feels real low to me. Overs are always fun to
bet,
too. So
maybe that's the two-teamer lock right there, Houston and the over.
There you go. You tease that up to 13.
Oh, wow. Well, let's not get crazy now,
tease
Sean.
That up to 13.5. Take the over down to 30.
Wow.
Wait, Houston 13.5, over 30 points. How am I not cashing that ticket, Ryan?
Probably the same way my Pittsburgh plus 2 under 43.5 didn't cash last week.
Wow, that's because you were going against the Lord and Savior, Tim Tebow.
And, well, we should talk about the parlay you put in, which is a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryan and I are feeling good about the dogs this week, so I was, getting a little amorous early on in the week. I parlayed San Francisco, Houston, and the Giants to win outright.
Getting 40-1 on that money line parlay.
$10 to win 392.
Yeah, that's a
fun little lottery
that's a
ticket.
39-1. For realistically, I feel like in the regular season you have 2 7.5-point dogs and a 3.5-point dog. You're not really thinking any of these teams can win. But I feel like the Giants only win 1 out of 4 of these games. I don't feel like Houston only wins 1 out of 4 of these games, which is what they're setting the odds at. So I feel like there's value in grabbing that. Now,
Yeah, I think both those teams win. If we're talking percent, I think they're winning like 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I mean, you look. Did Houston play Baltimore this year?
Yeah, they lost. Let me.
They got a garbage touchdown to cover, I believe.
I think it was like 29-18 or something.
I don't know. Maybe it's just I hate Joe Flacco too much. It's just I like it. I'm in on it.
Yeah, man. It feels you know, maybe even throw in Denver plus 14. I feel really good. And yeah, you want to talk upset specials? I'm taking Denver, man. That's my upset special. I mean, obviously, we've already kind of gone over the picks here, but
if you can find that money line somewhere, I saw it at plus 580. So.
Wow. 6-1 for a divisional round playoff.
That's pretty remarkable. Man, that would be crazy if they won.
That would be insane.
See, that's another one. Like, does Denver win 1 out of 6 of these games, or 1 out of 7?
Yeah,
That's what they're saying with that line. So,
I think so. Then, I think some of that magic we see, he's got a little bit more left in him, man. He's a magician, dude. Tebow.
Do you watch the NFL
Network
highlight show? Yeah. NFL.
Yeah, I watch some of it. Yeah.
Tebow. Oh. The best is when he does a shitty play and they go Tebow. No. Oh no. Nothing like Mooch and Deion Sanders singing in
Prime. What are you talking about, Prime? Rich Eisen was on the Adam Carolla podcast. He was telling a story about how Deion Sanders went hat shopping with him and picked out a hat for him, and he wore it, and everyone made fun of him. He told Deion about it. He's like, "Nah, them just haters." He's like, "You do you, Rich. You do you." And he told Rich they didn't.
What a story!
Those people don't know fashion, dude. Why is that not a segment on the NFL Network? They really missed out.
Oh man!
All right, real quick. I don't know if you saw, but Floyd Mayweather calling out Manny Pacquiao for a May 5th fight. Mayweather was like, "Yeah, come on, I want to fight you. You're a chump." He's like, "My, I guess they. I don't know how this works. I mean, it's Las Vegas, but he got his domestic abuse charges that he was found guilty
deferred.
Yeah, he got it deferred so they could fight May 5th."
It happens to athletes all the time. They defer shit to after the season. It's just like,
it is
who
hilarious.
Are we kidding? It's, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. But I'd love to see that fight go down.
I still want to have a conversation with someone, one of these Pacquiao or Mayweather haters, that can explain to me why Mayweather has been dodging Pacquiao. Like, that's the logic by all these Mayweather haters. Mayweather, he's scared to fight him, this and that. It's like, well, I don't see it. Look, he wants him to take a drug test. I don't see the big deal.
But now he's not even – he doesn't seem to be as hung up about the drug test anymore. He probably
ran out of money. I mean, that story leaked about him betting $1 million on a plus 140 money line. I mean, how much do you think he's losing if he's betting – you know, he's not winning every one of
those. Yeah, he's not leaking those stories, but he did bet on the Patriots against Tim Tebow. He bet $1 million on that, supposedly.
Was that the one he bet on? Wasn't there another one he bet on? He bet.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think he takes pictures of his betting slips and like tweets them out. Why am I not following that guy on Twitter? He seems like definitely worth checking out. All right, man. Well, thank you everyone for listening to Sports Gambling Podcast. You can log on to sportsgamblingpodcast.com, click the Amazon link, or even click the Win the Trophy link. You can go on and make these bets for free. You don't lose any money. You just lose credits. But if you win credits, you can cash them in for actual cash. And of course, subscribe to the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter, at Green Room Show. Ryan, what you at?
Oh, at Kramer Centric. And I'm officially back on Twitter, by the way.
Okay. He's back in the Twitter mix. Yeah. Shout out to Jocular for retweeting my Tim Tebow tweet.
Hey, we got some fans.
What was that guy's name on there?
I don't remember.
Sorry, man. We appreciate your fandom.
He'll get a special shout out in the championship round.
Yeah, we'll save it. We'll do a Super Bowl when we do the big Super Bowl show. You'll get a shout out
for sure.
You're trying to explain crafts to him. I saw on Twitter. Trying to encourage him. I think you probably sucked. That's probably the best product placement for Craps is, if you guys missed last week's episode, just download it and listen to the first 10 minutes Ryan talking about his epic 10 grand crap win. Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
All right. For the Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean Green, and he's...
Ryan Kramer.
Let it ride.